More of Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
Gerard Mayo feeling a sense of urgency. Interesting. Wonder what that is. You're 2-7 team. You're playing the Bears this weekend. No one's considering you. You're down there at the bottom, lumped in with all these other teams that are now going to be trying to lose out and get the number one pick. What urgency is Gerard Mayo feeling? Or is he trying to just instill that in his players so they don't go out and get embarrassed this weekend? I don't know. I don't know exactly what it is, but I found the word choice interesting. We've been talking about a sense of urgency all week. Sense of urgency. Got to have a sense of urgency. Well, what's so urgent? You know, what's so urgent for Gerard Mayo? Do you get a talking to?
Well, I think you could surmise that. That's possible, that he's feeling some heat. I also think you could take it in a more granular sense. And there was a cut I listened to that I don't think you've heard yet. So this is from Patriots.com in a little sit down with Mayo. And he was asked about last week's game. And I think this may tie into what you're talking about and why he would feel some urgency and why he'd want to impart some urgency on his players.
You know, there were plays to be made. And I always tell these guys, it's not just one play. You know, you can say the 2-point, go for it, don't go for it. You can say, you know, booty knocked the ball down, but there were so many plays in there that could change the outcome of the game that we just didn't make. And it falls on me to get the guys to focus. You know, the average play is 6 seconds per play.
Right.
Focus for six second increments. Give it everything you have, and hopefully the outcome will turn out different.
So it's more of a play on the field thing.
Yeah, and right? I think it was really interesting that he brought up booty.
Yeah.
So you and I,
that is interesting.
I think
we both
initially
dismissed that, yeah.
Talked about it, then yesterday kind of dismissed it, like, I don't even know what he could have done. Well, the head coach just brought it up and said he could have knocked the ball down, and I'm sorry.
I don't think he could have, but...
But the head coach thinks he could.
Yeah.
The head coach didn't like the way Booty handled that final play. And for him, that's an example of a lack of urgency, a lack of realizing any one action, player, play can affect the game. And I think that's where this urgency comment comes from. I don't think it's Jonathan Kraft or Robert Kraft told him, listen, if you don't, you promised WEEI you're going to win more than four games. If you don't win more than four games, you're out. I don't think he's out. I don't think he's going to be out. I actually think they've kind of righted the ship a little bit here. They are no longer teetering on mutiny and going down that road. And
Booty ever talk about that play? Do you ever say?
I haven't heard it. I haven't heard it yet. But they're also using a new. I haven't been down there on Wednesdays since they've instituted the post Ted Karras interviews are sort of not in the locker room. They're in the Revs locker room in front of a backdrop and open locker room. Maybe not quite what it was. So I need to.
Too many meat watchers. That's why.
Apparently.
Yeah.
Apparently.
People
so
watching the meat.
Yep. Absolutely. And which I'm actually for them doing it in a different way. But it has
for them watching the meat.
No. Doing interviews in a different way to
all
prevent.
Right. Well,
the
that
meat.
Was not clear. You didn't say that exactly. But all right,
I mean, to each his own. Whatever you want to do, his, her, whatever. Go down any road you want. But no, I don't believe he has talked about it, and I think that's an indication the coach at least thought he could have done more, could have shown a little more effort. And I think that is where the urgency is coming, that forget the record, forget anything. Every 6 seconds, because that was I heard him talk about that multiple times this week, that a play is like 6 seconds. I'm really only asking you to give me your effort for 6 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
Is it that freaking hard to do? If you play offense, there's only 60 plays you might be in on. I'm not asking you to do a whole heck of a lot. You're a professional football player. And I think that is what he's trying to instill in his team, that they're not good enough to miss their opportunity. If you miss one play in the first quarter, that might be the difference for us.
Because
we're not going to overcome the mistakes. We're not going to make up for it later with all our talent and our high scoring. You know what I mean? Like, the line is too fine. If anything, we're at a deficit. If anything, we're chasing, trying to win games here, trying to compete with other teams.
One last thought on that booty play, and this is probably beyond my purview, but I don't watch the All-22, but I did see one of those replays where it was just that side of the field.
Yep.
And it wasn't zoomed in all that much, but just based on where the safety came from, if Booty's looking up at the ball and the other guy comes from downfield and jumps in front of him, how's he supposed to even see that?
But even stop.
You're looking up at the ball. Like, if you're looking up here and then a guy comes up and jumps in front of you at the last second and picks it off.
Well, you do have, like, peripheral vision and, like, see things. But I think the issue is he didn't even really try to come back and stop and do anything.
Yeah.
Whether it's to catch the ball, break up a pass, hit a safety, he kind of, for lack of a better term, he Randy Mossed it. Oh, that ball's not getting to me. Nice throw, Andrew Walter, during that phase of his career, right?
Yeah.
That was kind of dismissive. And I think that's problematic for a young team, a young player, a scuffling team, a scuffling position group. They don't need any black marks against him. Mm-hmm. They've had more than a season's worth of black marks in like six or seven games. So let's go above it. Let's be try-hard. Let's be the try-hard wide receiver room because they're not that right now. And I think their coach is kind of trying to spread that idea.
Yeah, I would agree with that. 617-779-7937. Tommy Curran's going to join us here in just a few minutes. So Jerod Mayo, then, when he talks about urgency, maybe more of an on-field thing.
Yeah.
Is there urgency to the season? Is there urgency in a game-by-game basis? Like, we look at this season and we take it for what it is. Like, are they talking about urgency in Vegas and Carolina and, you know, with these other teams with two wins this year? Like, is that something that's coming up for them? Or at this point in the season is now when you start thinking about your draft pick and thinking about where it's all going to finish and who's playing well in college football and all that sort of stuff?
Well, and that's where I think their transparency has hurt them.
Yeah.
From day one, he talked about a foundation. This year's about laying the foundation. Oh, it's not about winning? Well, it's about winning. I'm just not sure if it's winning games this year or next year.
Right.
Well, Jonathan Jones isn't going to be on the team next year. So right there, you're laying, and I'm not calling him out because I think he's a professional, but I think you created a world. Hell, you had Elliott Wolf before game one saying, we're going to play younger players later in the year. This week, you have Alex Van Pelt talking about the fine line and the balance between playing the guys that actually do give you the best chance to win versus developing young players, giving them reps that are valuable. Like, we accepted it at the quarterback position. We wanted more reps for Drake May. Now, we also believed he was the better quarterback, but we wanted to develop him, right? And when everybody knows one of your goals is to develop young players, there's an awareness that we're not 100% all in on trying to win every down, every game, right?
Yeah.
And as humans, you just know that. And while you may think it's not affecting the way you go about your business, don't you think it affects the way you go about your business?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's got to.
That's how I look. They're human beings. So there is not a sense of urgency because there hasn't been a sense of urgency from day one when they talked about what their goals were for the year. So, you know, that's only going to get less urgent as the year goes on, less urgent as you lose games and are going down the road of preparing for a draft pick.
Yeah, that's the way it is. You know, this is what the NFL is. This is what the other side of it looks like. We got a glimpse of it last year. A lot of times, teams that are that bad don't just suddenly turn it around quickly. And I think you're seeing right now, this Patriots team isn't going to be the Houston Texans. They're not going to be the Washington Commanders. They're not going to be one of those teams where it's a quick turnaround. I was hoping for that. I was hoping we'd see steps taken towards that, and you really haven't. You really haven't in terms of the front office. You haven't in terms of the play on the field. You haven't in terms of the coaching. None of it has really pointed to, all right, a turnaround's really possible here, except for Drake May and his three games that he's played in the third of the season, which is what it's been. I mean, three games out of nine is not the majority of the snaps here. So it's nice to see him coming along, and I have no problem with his development and how long that may take and any mistakes or hiccups that come along the way. But that's it. This is not going to be one of those one season, oh my God, look at this, the new coach and the new quarterback are so good and everybody's going to want to play there next year and this is going to be a great thing going forward. And listen, with the Texans, they've taken a bit of a step back this year, I would say.
Yeah.
Not a big one. They're still a good team. They're still probably going to be a playoff team.
It's hard to win.
It's hard to win.
That's one of the things that this team has said that I think is most honest. It's really hard to win in the NFL.
Right.
And they are fighting an uphill battle. But I just think even from a fan perspective, if you asked fans to talk about their memories of the first, what are they, played nine games of the year, would anybody mention the wins? I don't think they would.
No.
I think everybody would mention Drake May plays, runs by Drake May, throws by Drake May, incomplete passes by Drake May. Drake May is at the center of Patriot Nation right now, and we've joked about it. He's never finished a game and won. He started the one game that ended up being a victory. So even fans are well aware that this year is about developing and building something moving forward, but that inherently means there's not really any urgency.
Yeah, that's true. All right, joining us right now here on the hotline is your good friend and my good friend, Tom E. Curran, NBC Sports Boston, Quick Slants, etc. He's brought to you by FlexCar. Save thousands with your flexible car lease at FlexCar.com and Drains by James, Eastern Mass's leader in residential and commercial drain cleaning and pipelining at DrainsByJames.com. At Drains by James, they give a poop about your pipes. Mr. Tom E. Curran, how are we doing today?
I'm great. I'm not sure which direction you're going to go, but it's funny. I'd love to pick up where Andy just left off with the notion of urgency and the fact that this is developmental year.
That's exactly where I was going to start. So why don't you just go ahead and pretend.
The floor is
yours. Let's pretend I just asked a really good question, Tommy, and you go ahead and answer it. Yeah.
And I wasn't a dink about whatever you asked me and the way you asked me and everything else. Yeah, right. Good. That way I could not be a dink.
Perfect.
I think that that's something that really occurred to me this week when May played at the level he did. He's ready. He's ready to win. He's ready to lead a team. And I talked to people this week, and they said, hey, look, there were plenty of things he could have done a little bit better out there that you might not be noticing as a layperson. And I do defer to that. But if he can put on a Superman cape for a team that is this completely lacking in talent and dominate a game in a way that very few can single-handedly do it, and I would, not comparing him to Brady, always that caveat, in a way that Brady necessarily couldn't do in the exact same fashion, then the urgency should be on everyone right now. There is no slow buildup that they needed to and wanted to engage in. I was talking week 13 or 14, maybe sometime in December, bring May in. He's ready now. So this should be a clarion call to ownership that if they have misgivings about offensive coordinators, wide receiver coaches, head coaches, defensive coordinators, direction of the team, GM, college director of player personnel, whoever, act on it. Don't give it another year to, well, maybe if he has another year without Bill around, he'll look a little bit better. No, you've already tried to see how everyone flourished post-Bill. You get 1 year to do that. And if you haven't done it by December, maybe don't pay your rent for January.
So, Tom, you bring up all of those guys that could be in the crosshairs of a exit interview type situation in January. The one that resonates with me, and I didn't see this coming from my own viewpoint, vantage point, is Elliott Wolf, because I wasn't one of those that was like, oh, you kept around a guy that was already in the building. That's just so dumb. You should have gone and got a GM. I thought this guy had a pretty good resume. He was kind of born and bred for this lifestyle and the father, the whole thing. And yet, when I look back on it now and I look at everything not named Drake May that occurred last March and April, I'm thoroughly unimpressed. And heading into what I now deem the latest most important offseason in Patriots history to surround Drake May with talent, right?
Yeah, they all, at this point, they're all vital.
Absolutely. And this is the latest most important offseason. I'm feeling less confident in saying, Elliott Wolf, here's $140 million. Here's the number three pick in the draft. Let's go surround Drake with stuff that'll make him good. Do you have similar trepidation at this point? And do you think internally there will be trepidation there?
I have had that for months. I have had that since he sat there at that pre-draft press conference and acted as if he had no concept of what it meant when people said the Patriots are not built to draft a quarterback right now. They should build around him. I can understand disagreeing with it because you see somebody like a Drake May who could be a phenomenal player and be the tide that lifts all boats. But to pretend that that's an off-the-wall suggestion, which, yeah, it was my suggestion, but I think other people think it too, is ludicrous. What does that? He said, what does that mean that you're not ready to support a quarterback? And he went on in that answer to say that he had NFL-level wide receivers, NFL-level offensive linemen, and he went on to proceed after the draft to say how good Chukwuma Okorafor or Caden Wallace could be at the left tackle position, though neither had played there. He was part of the decision-making processes since he's gotten here that helped drive this roster to 31st or 32nd in the NFL. So he's on watch virtually more than anyone. I just don't think that I don't think ownership feels the same level of urgency and dismay with him. That if you really parse the decisions he's made, you look at it and say, what is he doing? Does he know what he's doing? So, I think that if you have another top five pick and you have $130 million worth of cap space and you can't just re-sign all your own guys again, you have to make a trade. If you can't find anyone in free agency, and I don't blame him for the free agency haul that he didn't have, in part because it was not a good free agency crop, but if you can't conjure up a trade, conjure up some better middle-class players on your team, see you later.
We're talking with Tommy Kern, NBC Sports Boston, and Quick Slants. And, Tom, in your Quick Slants poll this week, I thought it was a very interesting one. They're all interesting. I like this one, though. It was about the three rookie quarterbacks who were drafted 1, 2, 3. And do you think the Patriots drafted the right one? Would you rather have May? Would you rather have Williams? How did you vote in that? And I think May was like a runaway winner at like 66% or something. How would you vote in that? And do you think that the people voting in it were lying to themselves?
I think recency bias might have entered into it. If it had been the week before when poor Drake got concussed and Jaden Daniels threw a Hail Mary touchdown to win a game, it probably would have been a much closer race. I think May had like 63% of the vote, then Daniels had 35 and Williams had like 4. But I think May is the best fit for this team. I think May's build, his physical toughness, his mental toughness, what appears to be an unbelievably non-eccentric, non-self-focused ability as a teammate continues to set him apart from, you know, what we would generally call the millennial athlete. He is, I haven't seen him on social media really at all. I haven't heard a peep from any of those types of things.
And he's Gen Z, by the way. He's not a millennial. Track. He's too young for millennial. He's Gen Z, I think.
Maybe right? You're right. I don't know. All I know is I'm Generation X, and we've hurt everybody. Just minding our own business, being quiet, and hosing the whole country. So I think that he is the best fit for this team at this time. He's probably not the most talented or polished right now, but to be able to endure the physical and mental aspects of being in this city for the next, hopefully, 4 to 10 years, he's the right guy.
So where do we go from here? Because I agree with you. Everybody, I love Drake May. I love his attitude. I love talking to him on Mondays. I think it comes naturally, the leadership, everything. And then I look at everything else not named Gonzo, and there's just nothing there. And there's a half a season to play, and they're moving Mike Onwenu to yet another position in the offensive line. He's got to run around for 12 seconds while Michael Jordan hops up and down and looks in circles. Like, where does this offense and team go over the second half of the season to make sure you're trying to develop Drake May without getting him killed?
Friend, find your Logan Mankins, find your Matt Light, find your better, more. If you have to spend a crap ton of money on some of the best position coaches ever to grace the planet, do it. Because it's coaching. It's coaching at the wide receiver position right now. I think Scott Peters has done a good job with the absolute stack of below-average players he's gotten. And God bless them, they've tried. But they need to spend their draft picks on mean, smart, nasty, big, physical offensive linemen.
But how do we get to the finish line? I agree with you on all of that. The problem is we got to put Drake May out there for the next 2.5 months. Like, how do
you mean the immediate? What are you going to do now?
Yeah, like
you
how do you
spread? You just do run and shoot. You just go run and shoot.
Because I really,
I'm serious.
He is the centerpiece of the offense. We were just talking about it. He's one of the best running quarterbacks in this short span, and mostly because he's running for his life. I have no faith in his receivers, not named Hunter Henry, and the running game isn't what it was supposed to be, so therefore there's no play-action game. They were supposed to be a screen team, but they can't screen. It's almost like I really don't know what to do to have any hope for Drake May to succeed and survive for the next 2.5 months.
I'd go run and shoot. I honestly would. I would use a ton of spread. I would use a ton of no huddle, 2 minute. And, so we went 3 and out with 3 incompletions. Sorry. You know what? We're going to have a 3rd overall pick. We're not going to have another stupid running play, as Eddie Duckworth used to call him. ASRP, another stupid running play. Not going to do that in the middle of the line. So you're in 3rd and 8, and then it's a free-for-all for poor Drake May. You spread it out. You throw, and if it's you have to punt, get it to Bryce, let him punt, play defense. And the defense can stop anybody? No, it's too bad. You lost 41-10. Good deal.
All right, before we let you go, Tommy, it's time for the flex of the game.
Is that crazy?
No,
that
it's not
totally
crazy.
Crazy.
That is not crazy.
No, it's not crazy.
It's what they're doing right now. It's what they
continue
are.
Continue doing it, yeah.
Right. Don't pretend you're something that you're not. It's like, you know, I'm going to try and dunk. No, you can't. Stop doing that.
All right. It's time for the Flex of the Game presented by FlexCar. Ditch the dealership. Save thousands with FlexCar. It's the Flex of the Game on Sunday in Chicago here, Tommy.
The Flex of the Game is for one time the Patriots to stop being the magic elixir for every team that's down on its luck. Think about it. 52-14 was what happened the week before to
Tennessee. Yeah.
Who the Patriots just lose
yeah.
to.
Yeah. You told us when the
Titans.
Teams that play the Lions always Titans. Lose the next
yeah.
week or something.
Okay. So the Titans have lost 52-40. Yeah, I did. That was a flex last week. The Niners were down on their luck. The Jacksonville Jaguars were on the verge of quitting. The Miami Dolphins had like 4 yards of offense in a primetime game. Each one of those teams got across the line from the Patriots and needed something good to happen, and it happened. This week you have the Chicago Bears, who lost 29-9. You have players openly, DJ Moore, saying, "Have you guys quit on your coach?" He said, "I'm not going to say no." Well, that's a bad sign. So will the Patriots, for once, not be the magic elixir for a team down on its luck? They're going to flex up and not let that happen. That's the Flex of the Game.
All right. That's Tommy Curran. Thanks so much for the time today. Always good to talk with you, and we'll talk to you Sunday for sure on Football Sunday here on WEEI and next Thursday as well. Tommy Curran, NBC Sports Boston. Thanks so much.
See you guys. Thank you.
All right. Tommy Curran joining us here on WEEI Afternoons. Good stuff there from him. We will return to the Bruins after this because the Bruins, we haven't talked about all day long so far, have a game tonight against the Calgary Flames, which I believe that is Linus Allmark's new team. So they'll be going at it tonight. And Jim Montgomery, I think, is getting heat that maybe deserves to be going to other people. I think Jim Montgomery has not had a good season, but I think he's getting a lot of heat that should maybe be going to Sweeney and maybe even going to Cam Neely. And we'll talk about that right after this.
Now, more of Afternoons with Arcand and Hart on WEEI.
Jim Montgomery, after the Bruins got blanked 4-0 by the Maple Leafs the other night to fall to 6-7-1 and fourth in the Atlantic Division. Talking about the special teams, which admittedly have been bad, and I'm not going to try and say that he's been a positive influence on that or really anything when it comes to this team. I don't think he's gotten them off to a good start. I don't think a lot of these guys were ready to go, but I do think that Jim Montgomery shouldering the entirety of what we've seen so far here to start the year, and it's been ugly. I mean, by Bruin standards, this is about as bad of a start as we've seen in a while. I mean, they have not. They usually get off to much better, much hotter starts than this. For whatever, better or for worse, they come into the season, they're ready to go. They did with Montgomery the last 2 years. That was the thing with Cassidy. Going all the way back to Claude, I feel like in the early stages of these seasons, and stats back it up recently to be sure, the Bruins are always ready to start the year, and they get off to good starts, and they beat the bad teams, and they have a good record. And they end up, you know, at the top of or near the top of the Atlantic Division, and that's been the case for a couple years now in a row. It's not the exact same team. They've lost some guys. There's been some turnover, sure. All that's true. But this, to me, is not just a coaching question. I think at some point, we have to take a good, long, serious look at Don Sweeney and Cam Neely and their philosophies and their strategies going into free agency, the idea of bringing them back to this big, bad Bruins type of team with these bigger guys. Max Johnson just got optioned down to Providence, cleared waivers. No one wanted him. And I just sort of feel like, you know, this is all, and Max Johnson. And I think that that's sort of the point, is that you weren't expecting them necessarily to load up like some kind of super team here in the offseason. I wasn't expecting that. They spent the money that they spent on guys that they thought could come in and help, but they haven't been great fits. And I don't think they're bad fits because Jim Montgomery doesn't know how to coach them. I think they just made some bad decisions. I think that they've brought in some players who they expected fit a profile, and they thought that profile was going to work for them, and they threw them out there, and nothing worked except for that fourth line. And then what do? They break up the fourth line and, you know, jumble everything up, which, again, I saw the lines today. They're all different again. And it just seems to me like that's the heart and soul of why this team is having such a hard time. I don't think it's because Montgomery forgot how to coach. I think they made some bad personnel decisions in the offseason, and they're getting no heat for it at all.
Just this offseason?
Yes, I'd say this offseason. And maybe going back a little ways, but, you know, last year I thought it was mostly positive stuff. And I thought coming into the year, they were positive upgrades. Like, you know, Max Jones was a former first-round pick, and Zadorov is a big, bruising defenseman, which I didn't have any problem with at the time. And Lindholm, I thought, was going to be a good top-line centerman. None of that's really panned out. You haven't seen really any of these new guys pan out all that much. And
at some point, we're 14 games into the season. Like, at some point, you want to see that. And you just haven't yet.
Because I also have questions about some of the long... I mean, Pasta's good. Now, we can have our quips with penalties and things he's been doing that have been unfortunate.
Getting benched, too, yeah.
Yeah, but he's a goal scorer. Like, he was going to get paid somewhere. You needed him as your central goal scorer, mm-hmm. whatever. McAvoy, is he living up to his paycheck?
No, I'd say he isn't.
Because I think that some of these things, like your highest paid players, and early on, I would probably say the same thing about Swayman, isn't living up to his contract. Mm-hmm. So some of it is re-signings, is keeping your own players. Some of it is getting old. Brad Marchand's getting older. Like, I think there's various layers, too, if you're going to quibble with the roster makeup. And certainly they haven't gotten immediate return on the investment of the offseason. So we just did it with Elliot Wolf. We just did it with Tommy Curran, talking about, well, you had a plan and you went about it and you spent a lot of money and doesn't look like that plan is working, right? So that falls on the guys enacting the plan. Now, with the Bruins, there's the sort of double layer of Neely, Sweeney, mm-hmm. like who do you really blame? Who's really enacting it? And you brought up the big bad Bruins and this idea that they got bigger and slower in the offseason. Now, that certainly feels like that would be a Neely thing, right? Like, he just sort of who he is, who he was, the whole thing. It feels like that could be a Neely thing. But I also think it's on everybody. And when it's on everybody, like, we talked about who's playing well. Crickets.
Yeah.
Crickets. Well, that's not just new guys. That's not just high-priced guys. That's not just, you know, holdover guys. That's everybody. And when it's so universal, I think that's when you say, what's going on with the coaching? Like, why is everyone underperforming or mm-hmm. fail? And then you mix in the idea to feed our own doubts is, well, they could have given him an extension in the offseason if they wanted to. Why didn't they give him an extension? Because is it just a traditional, he asked for X, they countered with Y, and they were too far apart, and okay, we'll have to kick this can down the road? Or did they have some doubts as to who their coach is?
Yeah.
Like, is he really the guy for the long term? And I know that Razor was on with the Midday guys, Jones and Keefe, and still kind of thinks that they love Montgomery and Montgomery's their coach for the foreseeable future. And it's like, okay, then why isn't he signed? And he literally answered, I don't know.
Right. And Scoops Keefe is hearing the exact opposite of that.
Right.
So, you know, that's something. By the way, Linus Allmark is in Ottawa, not Calgary. Got my Canadian teams mixed up.
No,
nobody
would have noted that on the text or Twitch chat.
It certainly, they certainly did, and they were certainly right, and I apologize 1,000 times, Ted Saranda style. Riley Tuft was another kid they brought in, another depth signing, 6'6", whatever he is. I mean, they bring in these big guys. Tuft was a first-round pick, too, I think. And he just got assigned to Providence a week ago, too. Like, these guys, they get here, and it's just not fitting in. They're not working out. It's not really happening for them. And the guys that they do have playing out there are adjusting not so great to their new line mates. And I just, it's, all of it is frustrating. All of it is frustrating to see. And to see it all get lumped onto Montgomery, who, you're right, I mean, you have to look at coaching at some level here. But this is a new team with a lot of new guys who aren't fitting in. And it's not just because the coaching scheme isn't exactly right. It's because there are these big, lumbering, slow players who aren't really necessarily, in my opinion anyway, and I think obviously the opinion of the team too, which is why they're down in the Providence right now, ready to contribute to this team.
So would you blow it up? Or like, are you going, so we were talking about doing like a Monty watch. Should there be a Neely watch? A Sweeney watch? A Neely Sweeney watch?
There should be a Sweeney watch, yes. I mean, I think there should be a Sweeney watch.
Because that's unfortunate, because you signed Lindholm for, what, 7 years?
Yeah.
I mean, you're on the hook. You've made some deals here that you're on the hook for uh-huh. for a long time.
Yeah.
That's concerning.
It is.
If that's the answer. If this is just a poorly constructed roster, that's problematic. Because you can move around some of the complementary pieces.
Right.
But your core is signed.
You're stuck with a lot of these guys.
Yeah.
And I think you can still build a good team around Lindholm and Pasternak and McAvoy and the other guys who were signed long term.
Swayman, like,
I still think that's possible to do. Those are good players. It's just right now, you have a mix, you have a group out there that I just don't think has that same kind of chemistry. And maybe there's more to it than that, but if you're going to put it all on Jim Montgomery, I don't think that's fair. I just don't. 617-779-7937. When we return, the Boston Celtics maybe underestimated the Golden State Warriors a little bit. Steve Kerr out-coaching Joe Mazzulla, and the Celtics got outworked. We'll discuss a tough night on Causeway Street right after this.